You're listening to the Laugh Button Podcast on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Fucking dreamers.
You young kids with your spirit. All right, so welcome to the Laugh Button Podcast. I am here, Matt Kleinschmidt, your editor-in-chief of thelaughbutton.com and your host of the Laugh Button Podcast. I'm here with two gentlemen, one I know very well, one I just met today, Kostaki Economopoulos. God, did I do it?
Yeah, you did it. I'm going to give you a full A on that.
Kostaki Economopoulos.
One stammer.
Welcome to the podcast.
In between names is pretty good.
I know. Listen, my last name's Kleinschmidt, and like it's two syllables, but people look at it and it's intimidating.
It's terrifying,
and they're like,
right.
Oh shit. So like I get it all the time. So I want to make sure when I see a brethren with fellow terrible terribly long last name, that I do it right too. And I'm also here with Aaron Hodges.
Hi.
10 years of radio program.
Yeah, I know. There you go. That's what you get. That's what you get. Kleinschmidt is easy once you have it. You have it down.
Totally.
Economopoulos can change every day.
Yes, absolutely. And apparently does.
It does. Yeah.
So Aaron is here from Your Lucky Dog Productions, which is a brand new label, production company, everything you started.
You got it.
And your friend Kostaki is putting out his new record on said label.
I mean, it's the perfect person to kick it off with. Partnered on a podcast together for what, 4 years now?
I didn't even know this.
Quick Snaps the Podcast.
What's this all about?
Football comedy talk. It's a podcast originally driven by NFL topical jokes.
Okay.
And then we bust each other's balls about our teams. He's a Giants fan. I'm a Falcons fan. I still need a hug.
That Super Bowl was tough on him.
Yeah. See, here's the funny thing. You guys are like talking about stuff, and I'm over here like sports.
Yeah,
sports,
I know.
Sports.
You're not a football guy.
Yeah.
I'm not really. Like, I know teams. Like, I know the Falcons play from. They're from Atlanta. I know the Giants are New York. I know the color schemes. Like, But I don't know players. I don't know who was drafted.
That's okay.
I know the rules of the game. Like, I'm usually the guy with my group of friends. I'm watching. I don't really watch the Super Bowl, but I'm usually the guy explaining to all my friends. No. This is what a first down is. So like, I'm the knowledgeable guy.
Oh, you're the link to the...
Wow.
Yeah. Which is not saying much.
It's all relative.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know anything about players. I know the big-time guys, like your quarterbacks and your...
The Tom Brady's and Aaron Rodgers and...
Yeah. The guys that, you know, have sex with supermodels, those guys.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, not anymore, though. I don't know if you know, if you're up on that gossip.
What's her name?
Olivia Munn. No longer.
No.
But
she was just helping her train.
Rumors that he's still
movie?
Out there with some more beautiful ladies recently.
Listen, I'm sure Aaron Rodgers is doing just fine. I'm sure as soon as he broke up with Olivia Munn, he walked a block down the street and had 4 or 5 new phone numbers.
Can I just say something kind of rude about Olivia Munn?
Sure.
I had
Wow, controversy. Two minutes in.
Such a crush on her from Newsroom.
Adorable. Yeah.
And then I saw her in an interview, like one of the late night shows, and I'm like, oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's just an actress.
Oh, yeah. Aaron Sorkin writes the words that
when
come
Aaron
out of her mouth
Sorkin
so eloquently.
Aaron Sorkin is speaking, when that's the mental voice, you know, through that body, when she's like a hot economist, then I'm like, hello.
And then she's very attractive, and then but she also seems like she's very...
And then when she's in a regular interview,
dumb.
Like,
dumb is wrong.
Oh,
dumb
she's just
wrong.
Another pretty girl who's in Hollywood. Like it was
totally.
Disappointing compared to an Aaron Sorkin character.
And I remember watching her train for Psylocke for the X, the most latest X Men, Days of Future, whatever. Is nuts. Apocalypse. I'm sorry.
That's my football. Like you could talk about that all day.
Oh, and you have no clue.
Way over my head.
Okay, well, she played one of the X Men in the most recent X Men movie. And all of her social media was her training and sword fighting and all this kind of stuff. And Aaron Rodgers is in the background.
Yeah. Right.
Fucking jumping rope or whatever the hell he was doing in the background.
Right. You would do anything Olivia asked you to do as well.
But the funny thing is, I'm not saying I wouldn't, Aaron. Well, what I'm saying is, like, so they're sitting in the background, and he's like, and she's like, prepping and training. And then I watched the movie. I'm like, where the fuck did all this go? Like, you did nothing. Like, she's in like 3 scenes and she cuts a car in half with a sword, which is clearly CGI. It's like, didn't need that much preparation to cut a car in half. So, yeah. I don't know how we got on the topic of Olivia Munn.
Yeah.
But
Aaron
Rodgers. The only thing I remember about Olivia Munn before that was she would work on Attack of the Show with Hardwick, too. So.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? I don't remember
her. Yeah, she has a bit of like nerd love.
Yeah, she has like that nerd culture. But again, I think the nerd guys loved her because she showed up at Comic-Con dressed like slave Princess Leia in the gold bikini.
Yeah, guys were like,
"Oh, you know stuff."
She's really beautiful.
She's a beautiful woman. I'm not taking anything away from her, but at the same time, she's also not a super intelligent economist like she played in the newsroom, which is very. It made it very attractive.
I totally.
Because like you're watching it, you're like, oh, she's talking about Glass-Steagall. It's like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, and I'm like, I know, I understood Glass-Steagall for the first time because Olivia Munn's talking about the newsroom. Yeah. For those who don't know, Glass-Steagall was an act that prevented banks from being investment banks and saving banks. They used to be two separate things. It was the Glass-Steagall Act. And then basically that got eradicated in the mid-90s by the Clinton administration, of all things. And then basically so banks could start investing the money you were saving. That's where all we got
now
our problems.
A little bit attracted to you.
Bam! That's my goal, Kostaki. That's totally my goal. So basically, to wrap a bow on Glass-Steagall, when that was revoked.
Can we really do that neatly? I feel like we'll be unpacking
this. We totally can. I can wrap it up for you guys in a second. We totally can. So Dodd-Frank, Barney Frank, the senator from Massachusetts, I want to say, who retired very recently, one of the last things he did in office was got this bill passed, which basically reinstated a lot of the Glass-Steagall stuff that protected our money. And Donald Trump actually just like kind of like went and like took some hot shots at it like this past week alone. So we're going to get fucked again, guys. That's what I'm saying. And not by Olivia Munn.
Damn.
That is a nice bow.
Yeah, see, I told you I could bow it. I told you I could put a bow on this
thing. That's true. I have nothing to add.
I told you I could. So, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
6 minute 29-second intro, guys. So welcome. This is the whole podcast. It's just tangent after tangent. We kind of bring it all back. So.
Cool. I like it.
Yeah. So, Kostaki, you've been a comedian for how many years now?
Long time, full time since early 94.
So you've seen rises, falls, lefts and rights, zigzags.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I love it. I still love it.
Of course you love it. You wouldn't be doing it this long if you didn't love it.
That's true. In fact, last week I was in L.A. and ended up hanging with some of my old school comic heroes.
Really?
I did Jake Johansson's podcast.
Oh, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
He's so great. Yeah. He's exactly what you want him to be. Okay. And I also ended up, weirdly, totally separate universe, had dinner with Emo Phillips.
Wow. Now, two very different conversations, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Emo is also exactly what you want him to be. Brilliant and weird and lovable and odd.
Can you have a human conversation with Emo Phillips?
Emo's great. Yeah.
Really?
He's absolutely great.
Because like, I just kind of picture like you trying to like... I would picture it as talking to a toddler, and not in a negative way,
but in
a way like
that's a funny
he
way
has
to
this
say that.
Like innocence about him where you're just kind of like, can I talk? Would Emo care about Glass-Steagall?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, he's obviously not doing the character when you're just having dinner with him, but he is an oddball, and his timing is weird, and he's totally this gentle, brilliant, lovable soul.
Cool.
He's cool. So anyway, it's a long answer to. I got to see sort
it's
of.
It's all right, man. You
Christmas
saw this.
Future.
You were here for the intro.
I feel like I'm looking at Christmas Future.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing some sets at the Hermosa Comedy and Magic Club
out there.
And some of the guys on that show were some of my older heroes as well. Yeah. So it was like Brian Kiley. You remember Brian?
Brian's
one of the writers for Conan.
Okay.
And he was knocking around New York doing brilliant sets for years. Jack Cohen, who ended up writing for The Tonight Show. And there's just so many kind of like real grown-ups in the craft that I ended up hanging out with. It was just a pleasure to see like, oh, they're still doing it. They still like it. They're still complaining about not being able to sell tickets or I wish this or this is good or man, my life's been so it's like the full range.
It's the same grind still.
It is, but there's a sort of a peace with it all in some of the grown-ups that I ended up hanging with. They enjoy it, and they're happy about the whole ride of it, which was nice to see.
That's great. Yeah, because, I mean, like, it's nice to see because also, like, it helps, like you said, Christmas future. It kind of helps predict your future. Like, oh, okay, these guys are still doing
this.
This could end very well. Well, I mean, that's also a sign of a comedian. Like, someone who's like, yeah, you know, a TV show would be great. You know, a sold out tours would be great. But like, I need to get on stage. It's not the desire. Right. It's not the one. It's the need. Maybe is where I'm going with this. Or it's like, I've been on stage in X amount of days. I need to get some time now. It's almost like a drug in certain ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like a couple of the guys at Hermosa felt that way. Like Jack Cohen and Brian Kiley, particularly. They got full careers and more money they could probably ever spend and doing great. And here they are doing 12 minutes at a thing, you know, like, you know, with some brand new jokes. Can't wait to see how they work and where the beats are. You know, it's kind of neat.
That's great. I mean, the easiest way I think the average comedy fan would be able to recognize this is from like the documentary Comedian with Jerry Seinfeld. Seinfeld ended, biggest sitcom on the planet.
Yeah.
Fucking dude trying to figure out his next 5 minutes over at Gotham Comedy Club.
Right.
It's just like, it's that need. Like, that guy does not need to take a stage for the rest of his life as a human being, but he wants to take the stage.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And those are the people where it's like, I love talking to those people because they're like, my ultimate goal is just to eke out an existence as a comedian because I am a comedian. I want to be a comedian.
Right.
Some people, it's like, they use comedy as a fallback where it's like, oh, my career as the lovable sidekick on a 90s sitcom about kids in high school that rhymes with Made by the Mel.
Shots fired, Dustin Diamond.
Listen, if Screech wants to come on this podcast and defend himself,
you put that together
come
nicely.
On this podcast.
Thought he was coming with the Olivia Munn heat. You brought the Dustin Diamond shit.
Okay, so we got Olivia Munn, we got Dustin Diamond, and I'm over here with Glass Steagall. Jesus Christ.
That's funny.
Hey, man, we all got our strengths and weaknesses. We all have strengths and weaknesses. So, but the point I'm trying to make is like those people, like, oh, I'll fall back on stand-up comedy, and like because people know me, I'll be able to sell a ticket or two. There's other people who are like, no, I like the craft. I want to figure out how to make this crowd react how I want them to react.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see like the full range of, like, emo, I think, has less of that sort of has to do it like some of the other guys do, but he has this sort of quiet piece about it, and he kind of picks and chooses, and he goes out and does his shows, and he's not doing a lot of show business things.
Yeah.
He's got a nice house, enjoying his wife and his life, and goes out and does some stand-up here and there. And
does Emo have kids?
There's a lot of ways to do it. No, he does not have kids.
Okay, second.
What would an emo Phillips child
That's be what like? I'm wondering. The other thing I'm wondering is, like, are you capable of doing an impression of Emo's real voice?
His real voice?
I'm so curious.
Here's what I'm curious about. You know how, like, when you watch, like, The Big Bang Theory and Johnny Pilecki or whatever his name is, like, he plays a nerd on on the TV shows, got glasses. And
is, like, he the Indian guy?
No. He's the guy that was on Roseanne. He was the daughter's
boyfriend. Oh, yes.
Johnny Pilecki,
yes.
I think his name is. Oh. But when you see him in real life, like, about Hollywood, he's got, like, the slick-backed hair and, like, the babes next to him. It's, like, the complete opposite.
Yeah?
Maybe that's what Emo Phillips is not on stage. When he's on stage, he's like, you know, he's got the hair and the thing. And then when he's off stage, slick back hair, like, I'm Emo Phillips. And
he's Johnny Depp.
He's Johnny Depp. Yeah. And just like,
no, it's...
No?
It's a time...
You know, just say yes.
That's a funny image, though. I like the idea of, like, a super slick emo.
Yeah.
No, he's just less so. It's like Lewis Black just cranks up the one angry part of himself.
Yeah.
Like, he's the gentle, kind of nice guy, and then when he gets pissed, he's sort of this crabby, crazy finger-pointy guy. So he just embraces that. I think Emo did a similar thing where he just exaggerates his own oddity into a full-blown character.
Gotcha.
But he is odd.
Well, I think everyone that does comedy is odd. Can we accept that as the actual thing?
Okay,
cool.
That.
So,
yeah.
so the new record, which Live at Acme, comes out this Friday,
right?
Which is the 29th,
26th.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I'll edit that out. I didn't make no mistakes on this podcast. It comes out Friday the 26th. And Aaron is releasing this on You Lucky Dog Productions.
We're excited, man. I was saying to him right just before we came in here, I'm excited for me because I'm excited about this album coming out and the whole thing and running around. I'm doing all these interviews. It's been a really fun process. But I'm super excited for him because he has a gigantic life change happening.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the I quit my day job moment. That's a big day in a man's life.
It's fucking big. I mean, because Aaron, we first met from your days over at SiriusXM.
That's right, yeah.
And my former co-host, Mark Seaman, is a mutual friend as well.
Yep.
So Mark says hi for your old...
Right.
I don't know, man. If he's listening, anyway.
Not a fan of the nickname?
No. I love the nickname, but the context never fucking works.
It was all...
It's like, Mark says hi, fuck you, Mark, for having that nickname.
Yeah, yeah. That is kind of annoying, yeah.
God damn it, Mark. I just hung out with Mark this week. Yeah. Anyway, so you used to work over at SiriusXM, and you worked with Mark very closely.
Yes, sir.
And that's
yeah.
how we first met. So you have a tremendous comedy career, dialogue, depth, breadth of comedy that like right. isn't like Kostaki's. It's completely different.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, I did stand up for about 2 years on and off, but there was nothing, no kind of regularity. Mm. But mostly my experience with comedy is from on the programming side
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, totally.
Programming the channels and doing production and, you know, listening and curating stations and producing talk shows, things like that, hosting talk shows, things like that. So, yeah, it's two different worlds.
Yeah, but it's kind of the yin to the yang. You need one to kind of get the other to happen. Like there's always great teams. Like there's a great comic, they have a great manager. There's a great label, they have great rosters of talent. So you do kind of need each other. It's a little
yeah, I agree.
Symbiotic.
And he's freaky good at all of the parts, like the editing mm-hmm. and having the knowledge and the sort of the. You know, he knows the gist of all of the beats, mm-hmm. right? He's done some stand-up, too, and he knows, like, you know, when we've worked on things and I listen to an edit, I'm like, God, that's so good. You know, sometimes it's exactly what I would have done, and sometimes it's better than what I would have done. It's like, ah. So it's a pleasure working with him.
And I will say this, like, just compliment to the album. I've listened to most of the album, well, parts of it, whatever Aaron's let me listen to.
Didn't I give you the whole thing?
I think you have.
You're a busy man. I know you don't have time.
Create sure. dramatic fucking tension for the podcast, Aaron. And you're not going with me.
Sorry, man.
No, so I've listened to it, and it sounds great. It sounds like, oh, someone recorded this and knows what they're doing. So
right.
Aaron, you didn't record it?
I didn't record it, but hired a very good engineer.
Again, I'm just joking. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's live at Acme, recorded at the Acme Comedy Studio. What's it called?
Acme Comedy Company.
Again, I'm going to edit that out because I make no fucking mistakes
on
this
podcast. Someday. It's a good one.
The Acme Comedy Company is, I mean, plenty of people have recorded specials there. I want to say Nick DiPaolo just recently recorded a special there.
I believe so, yeah.
Like... This is a no joke place. This is one of the best comedy clubs in the nation.
Yeah, it really is. It's one of the few that when you get road dogs together and they're comparing notes, it almost always makes the top five for comics.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pleasure to work that room. So
That's great.
That's why I went with that as the title too. It's like a nod to that place. It's just been so good to comics for so many years.
Yeah, I mean that's sometimes it doesn't happen. You don't get like a live from like Louis C.K. did like live from the Comedy Store. Bobby did like live from the Village Underground. Those are nice little nods because it's almost a character in itself of your special.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's not just a black box theater with a couple like strobe lights hanging off or something like that. Because
curating is a good word. I mean, when you're running a club. You know, the reason those crowds are good is because Lewis has been crushing it with putting good shows in there for 25 mm-hmm. years.
Yep.
It's not something that happens by accident.
Yeah, I mean, like, New York comedy is a little different. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people stress. I think it's easy to stress to a listener is New York Comedy Club, there's a lot of them. And sometimes it's tourists, sometimes it's a hot room, sometimes it's every other one. But when you go on the road... Like, you want to go on a road to someplace where it's not a papered room and it's full of comedy fans that understand that they need to shut the fuck up at these times, they need to applause at these times. And that takes time, and there's not everyone's great at it.
Right.
And I think in the rise of social media,
it's hard to
the
do
onus has come back to the comedian more than it's come back to the club. And it's like, oh, how big are your Twitter followers? Can you put out a couple tweets to promote the show?
And the business has changed.
Yeah,
right.
When it should be the club being like, listen, man, I spent months curating good talent, getting good people in here, weeding out the shit, so now we have comedy audience.
Right.
And it just doesn't seem like it happens that much that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit like a restaurant. Like, when you
okay.
the food better be good, or people don't come back.
Yeah.
Or, even worse, you train the crowd to, like, shitty burgers and fries kind of thing, and that's the people who are coming back.
Yeah.
Like, you know...
Or you don't value it by giving them free tickets or something like that.
My old home club, the Atlanta Punchline, was one of the best clubs in America, too. Mm-hmm. And it would have been easy to run a successful shitty club there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, book these country horrible, shiny object comedy kind of acts. And you could have built an audience that way. But that club, you know, every week was Larry Miller and Brian Regan and, mm-hmm. you know, Dave Chappelle. And they booked good acts in there always. Like, mm-hmm. I worked with some of the best coming up as, like, a kid in that club, you know?
Yeah.
I worked with Anthony Clark, and you know,
these are like these are names that I'm glad you're saying, because they're names of comics that we're in a comedy boom right now. I firmly believe that.
Sure.
And these are names that were like they weren't names when the comedy boom came. You know what I mean? Like they were like they were hustling before the comedy boom happened, and like a lot of what these guys are doing now is on the shoulders of those guys.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So yeah, so right. It's good that these names are being dropped.
And the clubs. I mean, it's hard to run a good club.
I'm not saying it's not.
It's so hard, especially now. You know, because the clubs. They're not competing against the other club. They're competing against Netflix and three glasses of wine, because that's a good night.
It is.
It's cheap and easy.
And you can pause it and go to the bathroom.
Yes. We're competing with other things that are fun and cheap and easy to do.
Yeah. I also think, though, the rise of stuff like Netflix and YouTube, I feel like it has made the comedy consumer, the comedy fan, smarter. I don't know if that's true or not. I feel like it has.
That's definitely true.
I think I agree with that.
People that go to shows... They know your bit. They know your act. They know whatever. So they're like, oh, we're checking you out on YouTube. You got this, that, or the other thing. So like, for me, as a fan of comedy, and I would imagine for you as a comedian, like you want those people at your shows because they kind of keep you, I don't say honest, but like,
well,
you can't continue to do the same act over and over again because they're like, oh.
Right. But the trade-off is, of course, you're getting, a better crowd per capita in terms of picking to come see you on purpose, which is, again, the other goal as for a comic is to figure out a way to tell the world what you do so that they come see you on purpose. Yeah. And for me, radio has really been a path to that. I wouldn't have drawn that up if I was designing my career from day one, but... You know, TV was always like, meh, a little bit here and there. And radio was like, come on. So that's just the path that I took. And, you know, now when I go do shows in Indiana and Illinois and Wisconsin, places where Bob and Tom are, people are coming to see me on purpose. And it completely changes the landscape for the comic on
stage. Yeah, I mean, that's something that I'm glad you brought up, too. Because, like, radio, it's 2017, but radio's still super important to this.
Oh, sure.
And Aaron, you can probably attest to this, too, having a history in radio.
Yeah, I mean, just working at SiriusXM, that was probably the most rewarding thing about it, is being able to help people with their careers with getting the airplay and the promotion and everything like that. And that was the best thing that I could ever hear, is like people came out to see them because they heard them on Raw Dog or whatever it may be. So, I mean, SiriusXM and, you know, Bob and Tom and there's a handful of others. Even the podcasts are a little bit of what you were saying about Netflix and making the comedy fans smarter, because they're involved in the process.
Yeah, I mean, radio, like, Bob and Tom's a great example. Like, Bob and Tom's one of those shows where I don't know if the coast really understand the impact that show has for a comedian.
Right.
It's big. I mean, it's still big. And they're not even talking to each other anymore. One of them's retired or something like that.
That's right.
One of them just retired. Yeah. So, but, like, a show like that, like, will move the needle. And I don't think it's tough to move the needle in 2017.
It really is.
Doing one
in terms
thing.
Of, because not only do they have to know who you are, they have to like you.
Yeah.
And they have to like you enough to make a plan and get a babysitter and pre-purchase the tickets. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of steps.
There are.
I hope they like you enough to buy the album.
Right. Yes. Hopefully. On paper. We'll see. We'll see.
You see where his bottom line
There's
is.
There's a producer.
Buy the album, guys. Aaron just quit his job. Buy the fucking album.
Yeah, so it's the game of, you know, finding a way to reach the audience. So, you know, like I've said this a zillion times in newer comics. In the old days, you could be completely unknown and do the Tonight Show, and the next day you were famous.
Yep.
Like, literally, they would recognize you at the barbershop the next day. Those days are over.
Gone.
The good news is you don't have to wait for that guy to anoint you.
You don't have to deal with the gatekeepers.
The gatekeeper is not as important as it used to be, and there's a lot of small-D democratic ways to build an audience. You can be the king of podcasting or Twitter or have a little web series or be the guy who makes the funniest vines in the world. There's 14 different things you can do. You know, there's videos on Facebook, and, you know, there's so many different paths now. So the bad news is no one thing is going to change your life.
Yeah.
The good news is you don't have to wait for the gatekeeper as much as you used to.
Patton Oswalt kind of touched upon that when he gave the keynote Just for Laughs a couple of years back, basically saying, like, the gatekeepers, you don't matter anymore. We are the talent. We have the access, and we can do what you do with our phones now.
Yeah.
So in a way, let's figure out a way to collaborate, because you do need us more than we need you these days. And I think that's a really good way of looking at it, too. And back to the podcast point that you brought up previously, The podcast, I feel like in many ways it became the new album, the new comedy album. In other ways, it became a way for a comedian to continually cultivate a fan base in a market that they can only visit once a year. Let's say, for example, you can only sell a room out in Kenosha, Wisconsin one weekend a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you still want to develop a fan base in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Well, everyone in Kenosha, Wisconsin can download your podcast and listen to you. And they have that weekly check-in with you, the fan base, all that kind of stuff. So like, podcasting has changed the game. I really do think
so, too. I mean, it's a great way to connect with people's long run.
Yeah.
And there's narrowcasting.
Yes.
If you want to listen to 35 minutes of two guys do football jokes and talk about the weekend that was in the NFL, you can find that. And you couldn't find that in a mainstream media situation.
Yeah.
That's a very narrow casted universe.
You're here on the Laugh Button Podcast. It's 2 past the hour. Got it? All right. You got the joke. Good.
New Jersey Charm Time.
New Jersey Charm Time. It's 2 past the hour. No. But that's like, you have to do that in radio. But podcast, we can sit there and have a long form conversation.
You can do
whatever you want. There's not 30 breaks in between,
right,
you know, what we're doing.
And I said this to Jake on the way to the club that night prior when I was in there talking to him. I literally went through and scanned all the FM and all the AM, nothing. And I put headphone in and I'm listening to Jake have this great conversation with Greg Barrett. Like, that's so much more interesting to me than whatever crazy thing that's on.
And comedians live very interesting lives. They're nomadic. You know, they're traveling many, many times per year and per week, per month, whatever it is.
Right.
They usually meet new people every day.
Yes.
They usually have some sort of really interesting way of looking at and digesting this information or this processing how they meet the world. And so putting a microphone in front of them is one of the most natural things you can do and saying, hey, talk into this. You will be entertaining. Don't worry.
You know?
Like someone like me who's not a comedian, I'm like, oh, well, I got to think of some stuff here and there. But I know most comedians can sit down and just kind of, this is not new to you. This is what you've been doing for your entire existence.
And I like it. I like it as a consumer. I like to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a fan of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Very cool. Very, very cool. So let's dive into the album a little bit. So you talk, I mean, the album is like you being a family man, basically. You know?
It's sort of, I'm trying to write more about me.
Yeah.
Well, in the old days, I was more of an observational guy. This is the first album that's really mostly about me.
Yeah, and I've noticed that, too, because, kids say the darndest things, but you really could write an entire album about just, like, things your 8-year-old says to you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, so some of that's on there, a lot of wife stuff.
Yes, very
much
so. Some
of the battle to see the kid is on there.
Yes.
Some of the crazy true stories of odd things that have happened along the way. So, yeah, most of it's... That's the direction I've been developing for the last several years. Most of it's anecdotal and personal at some level, you know.
Yeah. Well, also, that makes the best comedians because you can't steal someone's act if it's a story that actually fucking happened to you. You know
I
what
agree
I mean? You
that.
Just can't. Like it's like, yes, my daughter did say that to me.
Right.
Or yes, my wife did say that to me.
And the other thing, that it's got another layer to it. There's something sticky and interesting about someone sharing a little bit of themselves.
Yeah.
That's more interesting than a funny joke about Taco Bell or whatever, you know. Mm. And the other thing is, this is a weird goal for a comic, but I'm aware, like, on the nights when it's not going very well, a comic talking about themselves is still compelling. Mm-hmm. On the nights that it's not going well and you're doing a good Taco Bell joke, kill yourself. Right?
Yeah, because you're wasting everybody's time.
Yeah, I mean, so when there's something else going on there, not only is it survivable when it's bad, when it's good, it's got multi-layers and it's better, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense. It makes total sense. Don't get me wrong. I love a good one-liner as much as the next guy. But there's masters at that. Like, will there ever be another Mitch Hedberg? Doubt it. You know?
It's like
those jokes will be funny to a 2-year-old. They'll be funny to a 22-year-old. They'll be funny to an 82-year-old. Because they're just great one-liners.
Right.
But for the most part, comedians that really resonate with me are ones that talk about themselves. And, you know, I feel like every time a comedian gets, quote unquote, you know, finds their voice and gets honest about themselves, good things start to happen for them, too.
It's interesting, right?
There's a million different examples of that, too. I mean, like Louis C.K. probably being the biggest one. That guy's act was completely different.
Right.
And then he started talking about his wife and shitty kids.
Yeah,
and
he became, was absurdist.
And it became Supernova, right, you know, about that kind of stuff.
Right. And Nick Griffin. And,
yeah, there's plenty of examples like that. Of that, too.
That's true.
So it's unbelievable. So so you recorded at Acme. You released this. Is it a trailer? Is it a video snippet of like this joke you're talking about snoring with your wife?
Oh, yeah.
It's a great bit. And it's perfect for a video little snippet, like minute and a half, like quick thing.
That's the actual bed where it actually happens.
Is it really?
Yes.
And I'm assuming that's,
and I'm the actual wife.
That was my next question.
Actually,
is that your actual
looks
wife?
At me like that.
I can't describe the look. We have the video on the laughbun.com. Go look at the video. But the best way, I can't describe it other than like, it's a look I get from my wife too, Kostaki. I still haven't been able to put a finger on what that look is, but it's like, you son of a bitch, just listen, just do what I say, and
we'll all be better off for it.
Yeah. we're all married. You're married.
Yeah.
You're married. Yep. I'm married. Yep. Like, yep. If everyone gets that fucking look from their wife.
Yeah. That's what I live for. Seriously, I push her buttons all the time just to get that look. I
enjoy making fun of my wife as much as the next guy, but sometimes you just get this look and you're just like, it's a look where you're not sure if you should back off or just double down. That's the other thing too.
Double down every time. Double down.
Back off.
He's been how long have you been married?
3.5.
Oh, I thought you were going to drop some like 30 years marriage on me.
No.
I was like, damn it.
No, I actually got him beat.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So you got to listen to the guy who's been married.
That's right. Yeah. Time. Listen, old man. Let me tell you how life is.
Let me tell you how marriage is all about. Oh, that's great. So please, I implore you, go to thelaughbun.com, go to the YouTube. It's on YouTube for you, Lucky Dog Productions as well. And just watch this video. It's a great little snippet of like, it's a good introduction of you for people that aren't familiar with you.
Right.
Because it's like, oh, this is a guy and he's got this great joke. And the timing of it's perfect. Like, it's definitely a joke. You clearly like kind of like, you know, you worked up the beats and it's great. And I love that. But the video definitely like accompanies it too. And the look that your wife gives you, she just nailed it. I don't know if you did something to her in real life on that day to get that look going, but like, or if she's just that good a method actress.
Yeah,
I don't
really
know.
You just think of any myriad of things that I've done to get her into the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want to ruin the joke, but like when you determine the twist about her hearing, it's just like, I'm just like, I would say that to my wife too. Like, yeah, so this is your problem, not my problem. Why are we messing this up? So.
I love it because he's such a dick in the whole situation. He's the dick here.
I don't know if he's the dick.
He is the dick. But he's got a good point.
He's got a great point. And I hate that because it's every argument I have with my wife. I'm 100% correct, but I'm just an asshole about my delivery.
Right, yes, I have that problem too.
Therefore, it's like, fuck, I fucked up, and mm-hmm. she wins. Yep. God damn it, I'm on the couch.
I know exactly what you mean.
I've actually never been made to sleep on the couch. Like, is that a real thing?
No, that feels like an old cliche.
Really get put on, is that a cliche?
There are situations where I'm happier to be on the couch for a while. How
me
about
too.
That?
Yeah, me too.
Well, there's times where I also don't go to sleep. I like pass out. Like wherever I'm at, it's just like, I'm just out. You know? Like, who's got the joke? Is like I don't fall asleep. I pass out like a heroin addict. That's me. Like just like you know, just kind of out with like. You
sounds
know,
like Artie.
It does sound like an Artie joke. Actually, it probably is an Artie joke. It's definitely not mine. But like that's how I fall asleep. But so I'm always asleep on the couch before like she goes to bed anyway. So I don't know. So let's talk about this dynamic that you guys have. Clearly, you're co-hosting on a podcast, and
yeah, we've been buddies for a while.
Yeah. So like, what is this? How this conversation happens? Do you say I'm starting a record label, Kostaki be the first guy on it, or is it Kostaki saying I'm looking for a record label, you be my record label?
I think it was a little bit of both, right? Yeah, so it's kind of like this was a thing that I wanted to do for a few years.
Yeah,
I've been thinking about it, taking some steps towards it, but nothing was really serious, I think, until he was kind of like, hey, I'm thinking about maybe starting to get an album. And I'm like, you know, I'm kind of thinking about starting a label. Maybe this will make sense. And, I had to figure it out as far as the timing with the departure of Sirius XM and all that. But, I mean, even throughout the whole process, I was saying to him, like, let's just go through it. And if I'm not ready to go, I'll still help you edit it and do whatever. And then you do what you got to do. But if I'm ready to go, I'd love for you to be the first person on the album or on the label. And the timing just ended up working out really nice and so easy to work with. So... Just really, really proud of it.
I'm a pleasure.
Did I capture that correctly?
Actually, I do think you captured that exactly right.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
glad
about
you
right.
That answer.
Yeah,
yeah, that's exactly right. He's great. He's always been great with the podcast. At every turn, he's always consistently good at all the beats of it. So it was an easy choice, you know.
Gotcha.
It was the only tricky thing was the timing because he's a fucking nice guy and doesn't want to be the douche who's programming a thing that puts money in his pocket.
Of course.
So he times it so that's never a conflict, you know. It's good.
That's great. I mean, it sounds like it's a fun relationship, but it sounds like, you know, I'm assuming you have a plan B. Well, not plan B. That's a bad way to put it.
Construction.
So, dude, when this fails, you're ready to go do something else, right? Terrible way of putting that. No, but you obviously, there's obviously a business plan of some sort in your head, at least.
My head, yeah. I think, I mean, right now it's just going to be strictly audio albums. Okay. And, you know, eventually I think the next step is getting into producing live shows and showcases. Mm-hmm. Maybe eventually it gets into video producing, but for, you know, Netflix and what have you. But that's a ways down the line, and that's where I'd have to hire a lot of people because I don't really do video. I don't know that world. So I think that's the natural progression that's going to happen. But I also love the fact that I don't know. Like, there's an opportunity. There's some, like, I can't say too much about it, but, like, I was talking to somebody that might want to record their album in Stockholm. And I was like, oh, that's something I never thought about. Maybe I'll go to Stockholm and record an album.
That's very cool.
Right? So there's things like that where it's just like, I don't know where this is going to take me. Mm-hmm. And my attitude about it is like, I saw this opportunity to work with cool people in another facet of this comedy world. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, I'll get another job.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, this whole business is about following your dreams.
Yeah.
And doing things you want to do and not working that 9-to-5 tie job.
I don't want that job. Right.
I'm on a podcast and run a comedy website.
I know.
Does it look like I wanted that job?
Absolutely not.
You see what
man.
I'm wearing? Like, this is my good shirt, guys.
I know.
This is my good shirt.
You figured out what works for you, though.
I'm wearing that on Wednesday.
Yeah, this is going to have drinks with a client tonight, sure. It's not, but.
But he's trained quietly, maybe not even on purpose, for 10 years for this next thing. And he's got all the skills and the contacts and the wherewithal, and he understands the whole crazy business of it. So he's perfectly set to succeed.
When you say he trained.
He trained.
The first thing that popped into my head is the montage from Rocky IV.
Oh, yes.
I went that way.
You went wax on.
You went wax on.
I went wax on.
I went Rocky in the woods lifting tree branches and stumps and
running up
hills full of sand and
drinking raw eggs.
And lifting, like, was it Cousin Pauly and his wife, like, in the horse cart? Like, that's what I went. I went Rocky IV on this shit.
The shit that I love about that is that they always played the entire song for those montages, and they were 8-minute songs. It's like, come on, keep it moving,
Aaron. It's because his brother wrote them, and the longer they're on screen, he probably made more money on publishing or something.
Making that up?
No, his brother wrote like half of those songs.
Oh, really? Wow,
yeah,
good for
Sylvester,
Sly.
Sylvester Stallone's brother, George Stallone. I don't know his real name, but he wrote all the songs. Like, you're the best around. All
right,
that was all his brother.
Wow,
love
he
it.
Wrote like
that
all.
Love
song.
It.
He wrote like all of that. I got a computer right here. I can look it up.
Nah,
he,
don't worry
yeah,
about
fuck it.
It.
Okay, but no, he actually wrote those songs, from what I understand. So,
wow,
George Stallone.
That song's going to be in my head all day.
Jeff Stallone, you're the best around. Now just picture him running up the side of a fucking mountain in Russia.
I got headphones on, listening to old George Carlin albums.
Yeah.
There you go.
He's on the phone with the comics. How did you play my album?
Just running over these old bits, like, you know, there's black folks and there's Carlin, seven deadly sins. These classic bits just in your head.
Oh, man. But it's crazy to me that I'm even doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of, like, why I call the You Lucky Dogs. I feel like so lucky to be able to do this, right?
Yeah.
At one point, George Carlin was the only comedian that I knew.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like, I remember I could see myself in my apartment in Seaside Heights, New Jersey, the sad winter rental.
Shout out New Jersey.
Always,
I'm
all
a Jersey
day.
Guy too.
Yeah. Got to get the New Jersey shout outs. But I would be watching him, and I would do goofy shit with, like, taking his bits out of context. So I would ask George Carlin a question. I'd be like, George, what do you think about doctors? And then I'd play the video and be like, it's all guesswork with a lab coat. Or I forget what the actual line is. Like,
really? You did that?
I did that. Yeah.
I did that, hilarious. I did that with South Park and Timmy. But I pretended Timmy was my friend Frank's voice. I was like, hey, Frank. I'm glad I got a laugh from like a legit professional comedian found that funny, because I was like 19 when I did that shit. I was in college.
Yeah, that's probably about how old I was when I was talking to George. But for real, it's like that. I didn't even know that comedians was a thing. Like,
it was
like
a job. Yeah.
You could have that as a job. George was the only person I knew that was doing it, and yeah, that's a good person to know. But yeah, like for real, I had no idea about the industry and all that. But now that you know, I know a little bit more, I feel like, fuck it, let's go for it. There's a place for me here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fuck it up. In a good way.
On
Friday, May 26th, Aaron fucks it up. You're over here talking to George Carlin, and I'm talking to Timmy from fucking South Park. There's a big divide right there, guys. Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. That's great. Well, I'm glad it looks like it's going to be a positive future for it. Like, I know how hard you work and your work ethic. So
appreciate it.
I'm pretty excited about that. And Kostaki seems like a good dude. I just met him like 20 minutes ago, but he seems like he's all right, man.
I'm all right.
So let's dive into your history a little bit, Kostaki.
All right.
You started in Atlanta.
Yeah. I was an Atlanta guy.
About how old were you when you started stand up?
I kind of part of my origin story here.
Okay.
I've been listening to some books on branding. This is my origin story.
Oh, okay. Cool. No, but he's going to be your head of marketing in a second.
I need help in this regard. I could use all the help I could get. No, this is true. I literally turned down a couple of paying gigs to write papers when I was in graduate school.
Okay.
So I...
Like doctorate type of papers? Like thesis papers?
Yeah, I was working on my thesis, which at the time was about the influence of satire on our feelings about government.
Okay.
I was studying politics, and those were my two loves, what made people vote and what made people laugh.
Okay.
And so I ended up studying that specific thing to help me get through school.
Interesting that this time the current climate we're sitting in.
And the irony is I used to be a lot more political in my act.
Yeah.
And then the last several years I've just kind of moved away from it. I've gotten a little tired of the subject. And this is the first election cycle that I didn't write a bunch of jokes about.
Yeah.
All the prior cycles, even when no one else was talking about it, I always had like 10 minutes of stuff about the election.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I just didn't do it. I was jaded. I was tired. And everyone else was already doing it.
Of course.
So I kind of went the other way.
Well, if you need material about Glass-Steagall, I'm an expert, and we can call Olivia Munn.
Hilarious.
One of the three of us can get Olivia Munn on the phone in some way.
So I basically finished grad school, got my master's degree, kept all my books,
which
I still have at my mom's house.
I think I might still have some of my
books,
too.
In case it goes south, I can go back and teach.
Teaching. Okay. That's
parents were professors.
Okay. Okay. So, like, what are you, better than me?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes, Matt. In every single way.
No, I'm saying like that was kind of, you know, my dad was always busting my balls trying to get me to go back to school.
Yeah, it was
like a running gag we had for years, you know. Mm. Something terrible would happen to me and, you know, a gig would get canceled or something. He's like, it's not too late to go back to school, boy. And then he would have a big pile of papers to grade. And I'm like, it's not too late to get in the show business, Dad.
At least I don't have papers to grade.
I worked a half hour. I got free drinks. Yeah,
you might have to sleep in a closet, but at least you don't have to grade. At least you're not grading papers in the closet.
Yeah, so my early days were, I got my degree. I moved home with my parents so that I could go on the road and make $200 a week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And those days, it was a little bit of a different era. Most of the clubs were 5, 6, 7 nights a week. Mm-hmm. So I would go Tuesday through Sunday in Orlando, and then I would go, you know, Miami Tuesday through the next Sunday. And sometimes I would stay out for like 4, 5, 6 weeks in a row.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's the young man's game.
That's
part
the young man's game.
Like
right.
You can only do that when you're young and too stupid to know better.
Right.
That's the best way I put it.
And have the enthusiasm of like, I remember jumping on the bed at like the Holiday Inn, like, I'm so funny, they got to bring me in from out of town and pay for this room because there's nobody as funny as me in this town. I remember the enthusiasm I had.
King Kong ain't got nothing on me.
And of course, I'm in Salisbury, North Carolina, where there is nobody funny, period. It's a very low bar.
Yeah, that's why they brought you in.
Right.
Because there's 10 people in town, and they know each other's jokes.
Yes.
Bring in this other guy who's got might have different jokes.
Right.
King Kong ain't got you. Perfect. That was perfect. Okay, so you're about what at this age? At this age, where are you?
I was mid-20s, driving all over America.
Yeah.
You know, going as... I would go... I literally got my gig at Acme in Minneapolis on a guest set, driving from Atlanta. It was on my way in Minneapolis to North Dakota, and I stopped to do a guest set.
That's crazy.
So that was the era where I would literally like take some awful gig for just enough money to get by, and I would do other sets on the way to and from, and I was just hungry and interested, and I love this little beautiful silly craft. You
know? Yeah. And every comic I feel like has that story,
right?
A version of that story.
Yeah.
Where it's like I drove through 17 states,
right,
in 30 hours,
right,
to get paid $25.
I got there. The club was locked.
Yes,
It was closed. They didn't call me. Right. Everyone has that story.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why there's sort of this, like when you meet a comic, you kind of know the guy.
Yeah.
Even when you don't know the guy, like you have so many of these very specific experiences that you share. The magic of a bit, you know, taking off and some beautiful thing you can't wait to say. You just cannot fucking make it work to save your life. And, you know, eating it and killing and traveling and the weirdness of relationships. And like there's all these things that are very specific to like 3,000 people.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's true. It's super true. And I have this conversation a lot with comedians, too, where it's like the better you get at it, it's an isolating kind of profession.
Because
like you're on the road and you're in this town and you're literally only working an hour tops, you know? So it's like, what do I do to kill the rest of the time? It's like, every comedian I know has seen every movie in existence because they go to the movie. Cause on the weekends, what are they going to do on a Saturday afternoon or Friday afternoon? So some comics I know have kind of combated that with, well, they take a guy on the road with them if they can afford to or whatever. But like Brooks Whelan's a great example where he rents a car no matter where he goes. So he can just drive around and travel and see different parts of the town
or
hike this trail or do whatever that
is. Yeah.
He's really big into that kind of stuff. So like, but other comics, I can see why they fall into the darker parts of the profession where it's like, drug addiction, sex
you're
drugs.
Alone. Yeah. You get free drinks.
You get free drinks.
It's a night thing.
There's an attractive hostess or whatever it is. So it's like I can see how that very easily you can fall into those pitfalls.
Right.
You know, and you know, for the most part, most comics in some way are damaged.
some issues.
Yeah, I mean,
for real though, but that's why some of them get in the game in the first place. Is that allure?
100%. Yeah. But I don't know a single. I've yet to meet a single comedian and correct me if I'm wrong, who has been like, I grew up in a well-adjusted family. My dad and mom loved me a ton. I had a great relationship with my brothers. I had a great relationship with my girlfriend.
Right.
And everything's great, guys. I don't know a single comedian that can tell me that story.
Because you kind of have to be blissfully ignorant to have all that
be
correct.
But it also takes a certain personality. There's a level of tremendous narcissism and crushing insecurity.
Yeah, right.
And comedians are like in the middle of that. Or they lean one way or the other.
But there's all types, though, right?
100%.
There's the full range. You know? Some
100%.
Of them are just desperate for the hug from strangers that you get with stand-up. And some of them are curious about the process.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of different types.
Yeah, there's definitely guys out there that are like, I want to make this joke work. I want to refine it, tweak it, whatever, get it to where it is. And there's other guys who are like, I want to hang. You know, like, I want the stories. I don't want to work eight hours a day.
Right. It's a job avoidment. Yeah.
It is. I mean, and there's great comics at that. One of the first ones that pops up has, like, a Bert Kreischer type. Like, that guy, I heard Jim Brewer call him the Forrest Gump of stand-up comedy once. But it's so fucking true because...
Just because he's everywhere doing everything?
He he was in every major, political milestone of the history of comedy.
It's true.
So, like, I've heard Jim Brewer call him that, which makes total sense. And that guy is 100%, I do comedy for the hang. And I don't do it for the story. I don't do it for this, that, and the other thing. And you got another guy who might sit down and be like, they take this mentality of, I'm a comic. I'm going to write for 8 hours a day. I want to figure this out. I'm want to write jokes. This is my job. It's my profession. I take it very seriously.
Right.
And
who would you say that is?
I mean, there's plenty of examples. Like Bill Burr's, I always hear Bill Burr was one of those guys. Like Bobby talks about Bill Burr, like, where they'd be fucking around playing Xbox and Bill would be in the other room writing stuff.
Right.
Dimitri Martin's another guy I heard about who does a lot of that type of stuff too.
Right,
he wants
right.
to sit down and figure out the fucking joke.
Yeah.
So it takes all types. You're absolutely correct on that.
We had that conversation with Foxworthy. You know, he was definitely the guy that everyone was smoking weed and running around in the condo and he's writing and writing and writing.
I mean, one of the most successful comedians ever.
Hey, good for him.
Yeah. Man. No shit. We all need that tag. We all need that get her done or you might be a redneck or whatever. What do you think yours would be?
Jesus. I don't know. I haven't found it yet. Maybe
I might
why.
Be an asshole.
Yeah. Oh, that stings a little.
It only hurts because it's true. I might be an asshole if
yeah, I don't know.
I'm snoring and my wife
exactly.
wakes up.
And I tell her it's her fault.
Yeah.
That I'm annoying.
It's your fault, though. It's not mine. That's actually pretty good. I think mine would be Glass-Steagall.
Glass-Steagall.
It's a great word. It's I think that's
it
why I'm hung up on. It's fun to say.
Yeah.
It's fun to say.
Like petroleum. How's your petroleum?
Petroleum.
It's an old Sandler bit, I think.
Vaseline petroleum. I don't fucking know where I'm going with that. I'm trying to keep this on track. I just go everywhere. Where do you feel like you were going at this point? So you're mid 20s. You're jumping on couches, screaming, "You're the greatest, King Kong! I got shit on you."
Yeah, yeah. And, that faded quick, by the way.
And then how do you end up in New York? Do you end up in L.A.? Do you end up somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, my stand up career has been kind of three chapters so far.
Okay.
The big chapters. It would be the road from Atlanta driving around in a Mitsubishi Eclipse. You know, I was putting like 50 grand a year on that car. Mm-hmm. And just, I literally had like one of those clothing racks in the back and I was just pounding the road trying to learn how to be a comic. And I was eating it and killing and struggling and, you know, emceeing awful clubs. But I was working, I made a decision early to try to work. I'd rather work a good club for less money than middle shitty one-nighters for more money.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to open with a blowjob joke or whatever. You know, I tried to, like, keep writing good stuff. And I was in the South, so it'd be very easy to fall off the train and lose yourself in those kind of
Greg
gigs.
Greg Stone calls them empty-calorie jokes.
Ah, that's interesting.
It is, yeah. So I said I'm stealing it.
And there's
so
a place for those. There's a place for those.
Yeah,
and when you're, you know, sometimes you need some empty calories.
Yeah.
And fuck it, I like Pringles. That's a good metaphor.
Yeah.
All right, so then that was a big chunk of probably 8-ish years.
Okay.
And then I moved to LA for about 8-ish years. And now I've been in New York for 8-ish years.
Okay.
So I've kind of had the full experience of what it is to be a comic.
Yeah.
So going forward, I just hope it's more of the same. And I was talking to somebody earlier today, like, I feel pretty good about where I am. Like,
yeah.
I get to come home and be super dad. And my wife's awesome. And my kid's awesome. And I get to do some sets around and talk to Aaron once a week in the podcast. And I'm doing radio, and then I go out, and I get to, be cowboy comic guy, run around and deliver these jokes and work on the act, and my life's pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds like it's great. It's a great life.
I just want to keep growing this sort of football joke sort of cottage industry that I've been building, and I hope that continues to grow, and there's other places for that. Mm-hmm. I was at NFL Films yesterday filming something, and, I think that's kind of – that's growing. I really have a passion for that, and it's fun, and it's silly, and it's, and keep trying to write from the guts about things that are happening in my crazy head, you know, and less sort of observational.
It sounds like you need to kind of almost link up with a Bill Simmons type.
Bill Simmons?
Yeah, Bill Simmons podcast. He runs
really don't know Bill Simmons?
I don't know. Is this a generational thing? Help me.
No, he's
well, Grantland and all that stuff, and he basically has a podcast about. He used to work for ESPN.
Oh, okay.
And he got famously fired from ESPN for talking shit about something. I forget what it was.
I guess Goodell. I don't know.
Yeah. And then he basically ended up over at HBO, and he had a podcast called Monday Morning Quarterback, Friday.
I believe
morning,
so.
Something like that. Well, no, it was just called the Bill Simmons Podcast. I'm sorry. It was not Monday Morning Quarterback.
I don't follow him that closely, but I do know
who
he is.
Yeah, but he's a big writer in the world. But he kind of blends pop culture and comedians and sports. And it sounds like if you're talking about being a football.
Yeah, I should find Bill Simmons.
Yeah, you should. Bill Simmons, if you're listening to his podcast, and I know he is.
It's unbelievable.
I mean,
it's
like,
an unbelievable podcast.
I put his name into the ether, and that's just how this fucking works. I don't know if you know that or not, but... I'm pretty funny today, guys.
great moment.
Oh, jeez.
That was out loud.
I don't know.
This is going very well.
This is going great, guys. I can't believe this. No, so like, yeah, but he kind of does what it sounds like you're looking to do. It's just kind of like build this little empire based on like your love of sports and your love of Aaron Rodgers' ex-girlfriend.
She's very pretty.
It is very true. It's very cool. So you guys get connected, and I'm assuming the mutual love of football are like, we got to do this. We got to do this podcast. Or did someone put you together?
We got put together.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Initially. Yeah. Right.
Was this from SiriusXM?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah. So he kind of does a radio version of the Quick Snaps, and Sirius was part of that, where he would come in once a week and record like little vignettes for what was Blue Collar Radio at the time.
Okay.
And I would just help produce that and get it on the air. And then eventually we just kind of, you know, realized that I wanted to start a podcast. Again, it was just the timing was good again.
Yeah, you're right. That one was a similar kind of thing of like, you know, I'd sort of been dragging my feet on starting a podcast, and I talked to a guy who sort of talked me into it. He was like, you know, it's a connection with your people forever, and no suit can end it.
It's very true. I mean, that's great. I mean, the more I do this podcast, the more I really like it. Like, when we first started, I was like, okay, it's a little bit of a chore, it's a little bit of this. Right. But you get into those rhythms, and you're like, oh, well, I want to talk to more people that just aren't just necessary comedians. Like, I love talking to comedians. Right. We've had some fantastic comedians on the show, including yourself. But it's like, I want to talk to the guy that photographs comedians. I want to talk to the guy that releases them on records. I want to talk to the guy that has signed them or is a gatekeeper in some way. Because I think there's this endless fascinating story that makes up the narrative of stand-up comedy.
Right, yeah, I agree.
Or the business that is comedy. And it's not just... The problem with that, though, is there's guys that have done it longer than I have, better than I have. Like, you know, I can't be Marc Maron. I can only be Matt Kleinschmidt. You know, like, that guy's kind of pigeonholed a corner of comedy podcast that maybe Pete Holmes comes near. You know, that's about it. So
you say a lot of Zen shit, dude.
Do I? Dude.
I can't be. I can only be.
Which is, if you know me, is so not what I am. Glass-Steagall.
So he was also ready to branch out and do another something too, and it sort of landed and connected in a way that was really clicked and was organic right away.
So, and then the podcast is it a smashing success? Is it a runaway hit, or is it?
It's been good.
I don't know how you measure that.
Yeah,
but
downloads and people played it.
By that standard, I wouldn't call it a runaway success. But you know,
I wouldn't say it's great, man.
We have a good core group of fans that really love it and look forward to it every week. And people come to see him on the road just off the podcast. And
that's great. That's got to be the best
the goal is to have a home base where we, in all of the other crazy things that are happening in social media and appearances, and that you have a home base you kind of come back to that the hardcore fans can connect with that you can kind of do all the jokes, you know, like stations, you can't do all the jokes.
No.
It's nice to have a home where, and you know, there are things that are happening on Sunday that I just can't wait to like talk to him about. And it's kind of fun to have a place
for all of that stuff.
Yeah. We do every Monday night.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Sunday, he's up like a madman writing jokes. I write a few, but he's writing most of the jokes.
Oh, you guys put work into
for
your show?
Yeah, he puts
in
a ton.
I'm so fucking jealous.
I'm doing most of the post stuff, but he's doing the pre-work where...
I hooked up these microphones and hit record, guys.
Oh, dude, yeah, he's sweating.
That's a better path.
Well, it's an easier path. I don't know if it's a better path.
How many jokes would you say you write on a Sunday?
Oh, God. It's more than you end up
It's hearing. Probably about 30.
You imagine now, how terrible
I would imagine.
And I'm assuming that like it's not on. Is it on in the offseason of football? Do you talk about other sports?
We do only football.
Okay.
And occasionally he'll cram a basketball conversation in there.
Fans don't like that.
And they're right.
They're not right. He doesn't even know who Bill Simmons is.
And they're right.
Oh, I think
we have a generational gap.
I think I started a fight.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, that's kind of fun. That's why I just assumed it was something that only young people knew about.
Is this that Snapchat Simmons?
Right? That's what he sounds like sometimes.
Fidget spinners. Yeah. What's going on here?
Totally
what's going on here, guys?
That is true. Yeah, so it's fun to have a home base where we can have all of the stuff.
Yeah.
You know? It's good.
That's great. I mean, and how long has the podcast been going on for now?
Is this our fifth year?
I want to say four, but you might be right.
Jeez.
I think it's going on our fifth.
It's and I feel like it gets like listen, I'm on, this will be like episode like 120 something on this podcast.
Yeah.
I feel like we've only really started to hit our stride in the last 50 or so.
Yeah, yeah.
So
same.
You know what I mean? Like,
it does take a while.
Yeah, it definitely does to get some chops. And like, and in that time, I lost a co-host and I've gained other people, but I also feel like the conversations have become better and more organic.
It's
hard
to do. I
got text messages from him the other day. He's like, dude, this episode was fucking great.
It was
like,
really good. Like, your interview with Stone and Chris Gethard, they were really good.
Yeah. See? Look at that.
They were really good and I genuinely enjoyed it. And your new co-hosts are cool too. And, that's
Mark
Maron. Matt.
You can only be.
You can only be the.
Ain't got shit on me.
But for real, man, it's hard to juggle the new co-host and adjust to new people do all that stuff and keep this thing moving. So you're doing the Lord's
great,
work.
Great. I'm glad that, you know, I love hearing feedback like that. Obviously, because of the. Listen. Text me any kind of cool feedback. I'll invite you onto the podcast. That's how this is how Aaron got on this podcast.
I'm no dummy.
He's like, man. He's like, I want to sweeten him up, and then I'm gonna fuck going for the kill, and then we're gonna make it happen.
Well, I hope you know it wasn't completely
ulterior
motives.
No,
those were genuine sentiments.
No, not at all. Because I was actually thinking, I was like, oh, when Aaron starts his label, I want to actually have him on to kind of like talk about it. So I know that you were doing it for a while. We had a preliminary conversation about it, but I didn't know your timeline was like.
It was all over the place.
It could start in March. And I think it was, you know, I think this was maybe January, February when we talked about this.
Yeah,
you're like, it could start in March, it can start in July. I don't really know yet. So I was like, oh, you're all over the place. So.
I just thought of a question that I've never asked you off the air.
Uh-oh.
Is this an appropriate situation?
Totally. Yes.
Well. All right. I've always asked club owners this sort of thing, and it's a similar kind of as you go forward. We've been so obsessed with my album, at least I have been.
Uh-huh.
So we've been talking about me constantly. Going forward, how do you pick and choose and cultivate a label? Like, do you chase after people you love regardless of, you know, what numbers they're going to bring in? Do you accept some guys that maybe you don't love as much, but you know they've got an audience? How do you, you know?
It's a good question. I think it's a mix of all that.
Yeah.
I think, for the most part, You Lucky Dog Productions is going to put out really good comics that could benefit from support on the promotion and the mixing and the editing and all that stuff. People that haven't necessarily completely broken through yet. So I think it's going to be a lot of emerging comedians. And then if I get a chance to work with Bill Burr, it's not going to happen, but, you know, that level, then yes, I'm going to do that.
Right.
But I think the focus is going to be on, you know, people that are emerging and almost about to break through to a higher level.
Dustin Diamond
is what I'm looking at.
We're going to sign Screech tomorrow. Let's make this happen.
But I got. I'm actually working on the second album. If I could just talk about that for a
absolutely.
Second.
That was actually the question I didn't. And again, I'm glad you brought it up because I wasn't sure. I was like, I didn't know if you were a jealous boyfriend or not.
That's what, he is
frankly,
a little
I didn't
bit.
Know. I didn't know
a
if you're like,
I'm thrilled to be
we're
first.
Only talking about me and my
I
status.
I mean, whoever
on this
other guy is, sloppy seconds. That's all I'm saying.
And watch it be like, oh, that's Doug Stanhope.
Yeah.
Watch it just be someone where you're like, no. So what's in the pipeline? What do
it's
you
actually with J.L. Covey, and he does Trump impersonation.
Oh, yeah.
So in my opinion, it's the best, and his too. And basically, it's a very high concept album. It's not a stand up album.
Okay.
So it's kind of like Trump. FDR used to do the fireside chats.
Yes.
Similar to that, Trump's doing fireside craps. So he's shitting on something or someone while he's on the toilet. Right, and it's just like
he said a high concept record, and then he says a Donald Trump impersonator taking shits. What is your version of low concept, Aaron?
Touche.
High concept,
but it's basically like his first 100 days. So you go in like a chronological order of things that are happening throughout the first 100 days.
Okay,
and it's also kind of patterned after some Death Row Records album.
Oh no,
yeah. So
it's like the artwork going to be like. Oh, so is it going to be like that that one where they're all wearing black and it's like Suge and Snoop and Dre?
Oh, no, but the artwork is fantastic. I got a rough sketch I can show
you.
Okay,
yeah, Death Row, or you could go No Limit, like Master P, like just like terrible Photoshop, like tanks.
I'll be No Limit.
Gold. Yeah. You do No Limit?
After the fifth album, when I'm able to floss like that, that's when I'll be No Limit. But
that's true. No Limit, like...
They were just all about
Master
flossing.
P spent a lot of money very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Master P.
Yeah, what's he doing now?
I don't know. I heard him on the new Solange record.
Okay.
You heard that too, right, Kostaki? Yeah. But I don't know what he's up to.
He knew immediately to look at me.
But no, it's I'm looking forward to that. That'll be out probably mid-June at some point.
Very cool.
And I think it's got a chance to be sneaky successful.
Yeah, I mean, it very could be. I mean, like the Donald Trump thing is it's on people's lips. It's on people's mouths, you know.
For
like,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So listen, you got to keep him in office till at least that time. Right.
We were panicking about a week ago when it wasn't looking so good. Right?
You know what? You know what's funny about that guy? And I'm not going to get too political on this podcast. It's just like everything that came out about him pre-election up until like now, it was like, this is it. This is what's going to take him down.
Right.
This is it.
There were like 17 moments where this is it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is it. This is where he goes down. He made fun of a Gold Star family. The whole grab him by the pussy thing, the whole this side or the other thing.
Right. The crippled.
Yeah,
journalist.
Everything
was.
And then it's like he fucking figures it out, man. I mean, the guy's like a cockroach.
Yeah.
He
is. going to survive a nuclear attack.
Reagan was the Teflon president. Nothing sticks to him.
Yeah,
but, man,
he's the real Teflon
this guy's
Don.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, nothing.
What do they say? Cockroaches can survive a nuclear war, and chances are he'll probably put us into a nuclear
war. Going to test that theory.
Ba-dum-ching! Let's go. Yeah. So, all right, let's end it on that. Let's end it on cockroaches and nuclear wars, guys.
Love it.
I feel like we've talked a lot. I feel like we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot about You Like a Dog Productions. We've learned a lot about Costas. Oh, God damn it.
Kostaki Economopoulos.
I went to high school with a kid named Costas Eliftaliro, and like I memorized his name.
Well, that's fair, though. That's
And I totally just called you Costas Eliftaliro.
I'll answer to Costas. That's one of the many short versions of my crazy name.
Kostaki Economopoulos. Thank
Was he
you.
Greek?
No.
Just bad luck.
He wasn't Greek at all. His family owned the local diner, but he was not Greek. No, he was definitely Greek, but yes. He's a great dude. So, Kostaki Economopoulos, Aaron Hodges from You Lucky Dog Productions, live at Acme, is in stores on May 26th, Friday, via You Lucky Dog Productions. I feel like we learned a lot. I feel like we grew a lot.
I do, too.
Is there anything we missed?
I would like to opine on Glass-Steagall a little bit more, but other than that...
We learned about Glass-Steagall.
Yeah. Am I allowed to veto any of these suggestions?
I don't know. I feel like I put a good bow on Glass-Steagall, dude.
You did.
I don't think I can...
You're
like,
right.
I can't, like, reopen that.
You
I'm sorry.
You said you were gonna, and you did.
Yeah, I told you I was gonna. So,
but thank you, Matt.
So, yeah. So, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks
it's
for
been,
us.
Been a pure
this
pleasure.
A pleasure.
So, where can people go to find out more information about you, Kostaki?
I'm at Kostaki.com, one of the many advantages of being named Kostaki.
Yeah.
You can get the website with just your first
name.
No
one was trying to park it.
Kostaki.com. No.
You didn't have to go for the .net because someone
actually,
took .com.
There was a Greek in Australia with like a shitty homepage on that site for a long time.
Really?
And then one day I went and it was gone and I'm like, yoink.
Snagged. That's great. And then can people catch you live around the city or are all your dates on your website?
Yes. All the dates are on the website. Great. And I'm here and there and all over the place and I'm in the Midwest more often than not.
Gotcha. And Aaron...
YouLuckyDogProductions.com.
Great. And the podcast is?
Quick Snaps. It's once a week on Monday during the season and about once a month in the off season.
We're going to do a new one this weekend, and we'll probably be really tuned up and drunk celebrating the release of this album. So that
there
might be fun.
That actually might be a
couple
good one.
Of my old friends are going to tell some stories. This will be a bit of a departure from what we usually do. It'll be fun.
Well, thanks for coming on, gentlemen. It's been a total blast.
It's a pleasure.
All right, catch you later. Bye.